I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land I'm recording from today. I pay my respect to the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. I also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you are listening from today. Coming up in this episode, any young Indians watching this?
Yeah, listen to your parents.
Listen to your parents.
Yeah, any day, like a big bomb is away from you. Like, if, you know, it's just like any gigs are potential for a bombing. So
okay, and yeah. Are most of the stories in it actually from your life, or a lot of it is fictionalized?
I'm telling my parents it's fictionalized, but it's like, yeah, so Australia thinks of India as more than cricket and curry. But I'm like, maybe for someone who's, it depends where you are, because for a lot of Australia, that still is just what India is.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Karma. I'm your host, Aditya Gautam. In this series, I talk to the funniest South Asian comedians in Australia. We listen to their rants, stories, life lessons, and most importantly, we listen to their jokes. Today, I'm talking to Urvi Majumdar. Urvi is an Indian-Australian writer, actor, and comedian. She has been acting in different TV shows. She's performed her comedy shows all across Australia. And recently, an adaptation of her first comedy solo show was selected for an ABC online series. Let's start the show with one of her jokes.
My dad has an Excel spreadsheet of all of our spending from June 1988 to today. Yeah, no, this is actually true. It's interactive and he's proud of it, so bless. That's great. I don't know if your parents did this. My dad, instead of buying a $5 perfect mango, he will spend $10 on 20 really brown, mushy ones. It's like his rule of thumb is, I'm not buying it unless it's brown and seeping liquid. And it's annoying because my whole life I grew up thinking that I hated fruit, but it turns out that it was just off. You're like, oh, strawberries aren't meant to taste like rancid acid. I didn't know.
Sweet. It's a great joke.
Yeah,
I've heard it like 20 times since yesterday. So the first thing that made me think of is that my dad, he does something very similar,
yeah.
But just less technology savvy.
He
has this diary and he notes down at the end of the day everything, all expenditures
expenses.
Of the
yeah,
day.
Yeah.
And it's very cute and he does it. he does it religiously.
Yeah.
I bet he could pull out what I was spending in 1988 as well.
Yeah.
But you know what? I was thinking about how for me, like I'm a bit spoiled and privileged. I don't think about spending like he does, or at least I thought that. But when I moved to Australia, I realized, God, I saw like how white expensive. People spend money, and they have no concept of savings. I was like, shit, I clearly, even though as compared to him, I'm not nothing like him in terms of how crazy he is with saving and meticulously keeping track of his expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have imbibed some of that, clearly, because I even though I don't do it as much as him, I do a bit of it.
Yeah.
How are you with money? Have you like imbibed some of that?
I think I'm pretty much similar to you. Like, I feel like it's kind of funny because when I guess when you first move from India, like we moved when I was six, and my parents talk about the experience of kind of converting things to rupees all the time, and you're like, it doesn't compute. And I think that's kind of like an analogy of like how it is to just like move to a different country and just trying to weigh up different things that don't actually speak to each other.
Yeah.
I feel like as I get older now, my dad is actually helping me with my finances a little bit and trying to just be like, this is how you put data into a spreadsheet to, I mean, I haven't done anything yet, but hopefully soon. I think I'd like to be able to save as much as he can, but I know that it probably won't happen. So I think it's just like a balance of, I guess, like the Western way of living and also what your parents do.
Yeah. Have you got a spreadsheet now?
I don't. He's like making me a template to start to fill out. So I think I'll do, I mean, of this year, because it's my first year of sort of doing comedy more freelance, I think he has got a good point about having better financial literacy in the comedy industry, because no one really speaks about super and how you're meant to put aside some pay for that and, you know, manage yourself as a business. So yeah. I think now we're kind of converging a bit more, and I'm using what he said as good advice.
Sweet. So you would recommend I should start keeping a diary as well?
Yeah, I think once you start, I mean, you were meant to, I don't know if you know this, I've been having this, this is like such a boring topic, as in not this, but I mean, like, I've been talking about super and tax for the last week, just since my dad and I had a meeting, and he's like, going through the, like, you know, when you get paid for an invoice, you need to yourself put in your super as well as put aside stuff for tax. And I've just never done that.
I've never done that either.
Yeah, exactly. But technically, once you have an ABN, you are a business. So you should, like, you're an employee of yourself. So no one else is paying it. So yeah, it's just like crazy. I mean, all this stuff, I was like, it's so boring all my 20s. But now that I'm 31, I feel like, yeah, if it's going to be sustainable, I need to take some of his accounting skills in.
I love that, Urvi. Any young Indians watching this?
Yeah, listen to your parents.
Listen to your parents.
Yeah, I think it was funny because my whole life I've kind of always worked. Obviously, you probably have spoken about this already, but it's hard to like, you don't just go straight into comedy as a brown person. Usually you have a degree and you do some other work. So, yeah, and I feel sometimes I started a bit later, but then also I'm grateful for having some savings, so it's not so hard financially.
Okay, nice. What did you study?
I studied an arts degree, and then I did honours and then teaching, and then I worked kind of three different jobs, like teaching, policy and government, and then also as a producer at Footscray Arts Centre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so at what point did you start comedy?
Since I got, I started in the first year of teaching, so I was maybe 23 when I started.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's been a little while now, so almost, 8 years or so.
Okay.
So yeah.
What made you want to get into comedy?
Started. I think I used to, I always liked creative writing and acting, but then I found, I guess I kind of just wanted to give comedy a go, and I was going through like a breakup at the time and just crying all the time and just writing poems and submitting them to journals, and no one responded. So I felt like comedy was a bit more of an immediate community.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, you kind of, it's an interesting question because I kind of just like, you just get addicted to it, I guess. But it's also a lot of fun, so I don't think you can stick at it without really loving it.
Yeah, you definitely get addicted to it.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain that to people who haven't done it.
I know. They're like, why would you do this brutal thing? That's, I mean, even it doesn't really, even now, it's like you keep getting, you know, more opportunities, which is great. But then any day, like, a big bomb is away from you. Like, if, you know, it's just like any gigs are potential for a bombing. So it happens.
But you come back.
Yeah, you don't want to end on that.
What I was also thinking when I was listening to this joke was this incident that had happened where when I was, I don't know, like 10th grade or something, I was really, I went, my dad gave me some money to go buy some clothes. Like, it used to be in like an annual thing where he would give me money and go, you can buy some clothes with this, right?
That's
so
nice.
He gave me a bunch of money. I went to this place in Delhi called Palika Bazaar. It's a very popular underground market in the center of Delhi.
Awesome.
And I was like a big fan of Backstreet Boys at that time. And I saw a Backstreet Boys t-shirt, which was for like a 1500 rupees, which was the entire money he had given me to buy like 6 t-shirts with. And I bought that one t-shirt and I came back home and he scolded the hell. He used to never scold me. He's like a super chill dad, but that day he lost it. He's like, what the hell is wrong with you? This was 6 t-shirt. This is all you're wearing now for the rest of the year. Did you have any such episode? Like,
I think for us growing up here, so we moved when I was 6, my sister was 4, and I felt like we would, like, my parents are, I mean, like, now that I look back, I'm like, it's actually incredible that my dad managed to raise us and my mom as well, like, on single income. So but at the time you don't understand that, so you're like, why can't we just get all this stuff, the same brands that everyone else has? But we'd always have these trips to India, and my parents would say, it's like, my dad's like, go to the dentist in India, like, save your glasses, trip for India. So it's just like anything that costs money is just save it for India. And I feel like we always had like different, I was like, it's like boxer shorts or something. Like, my parents would never buy like the Australian ones, and then I'd have to bring this stuff back from India and be like, no, it's the same, it's just like the Indian version. So, I think it's a lot of, but I feel like because me and my sister didn't have all the, like, we always went to op shops, and we actually had a really good childhood here. But because we didn't have every single thing, it forced us to, like, use our imagination more, which, you know, I say that's what I tell myself has been good.
Is the fruit thing for real? Do you eat fruit now?
Yeah, I do eat fruit, but it is real. It's like, even now, it's like during summer, my dad will go to Springvale and just buy, like, literally just what the joke is, and then having to take home all this, like, rotten fruit all the time is annoying.
I feel like I probably think more like your parents do, because I obviously, like, you know, I came pretty late to this country, and you can't help but think in terms of, like, I have a lot of cousins who've moved here a couple of years back. One in Perth, I met him recently when I went to Perth Fringe, and you've been to Perth, right?
Yes, one time.
So he has been living in Perth for 15 years, owns 3 houses in Perth, has never been to Rottnest Island.
Oh, really?
Everybody goes to Rottnest Island. It's right there. Yeah. That's like the only thing to do there.
Yeah. You go,
never been, doesn't care for it.
Okay.
It's just a weird immigrant mentality where another cousin in Adelaide, very similar, just buying houses. Like,
yeah.
The only thing, like, I guess it's something when you come here in later in life, you have this urge to just, you know, save and get houses because you feel out of place or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Definitely.
So have you thought about how the way you look at your view of world and of Australia is different to your parents? Is it very different because you kind of grew up here?
Yeah, I think it is. I think in key places it is different. And I think it's because of, like, the privilege that we had. Like, my parents worked so hard to get us into good schools and everything. But the ironic thing is that because they worked so hard, we don't actually have the same challenges that they did growing up. But then it leads to misunderstanding. Like, even with, you know, like, we're so lucky here that, like, you can kind of give things a go, and then you're not going to end up, like, homeless most likely. But in India, it's literally like, you know, it's so privileged to even try to be an artist here. In India, lots of people just wouldn't even have that chance. So
100%.
For my parents, I think that's the major difference, is just like that, you can trust and take a chance here. But obviously for them, it's just like a live or die mentality, and they're constantly scared of being homeless and having no money.
So I also, with the joke, I was like, I love the part where you say I had to Google the accent even though I had it.
Yeah.
I think that's so funny.
Yes.
it's hilarious. And secondly, I have to say, as someone who has an Indian accent, you nail it. It's fine.
Really?
It's not offensive at all.
Good.
Because
that's good to
because
know.
You know, I don't know if you relate to this. There are 2 kinds of Indian accents that people do.
Yeah.
There's one which seems mocky, and it feels like it's not nice.
Like,
and
the Simpsons. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then there is what you did in this joke, which is the real thing. It's not an Indian accent you're doing.
Yeah.
You're literally doing your dad's accent. You're not doing the Indian accent. You know what I mean? And there's a difference.
Yes.
When someone does, hello, how are you doing? And that's them doing an Indian accent.
Yeah.
Whatever the Indian accent is. Obviously, there is no such thing as an Indian accent. There's 1 billion people living in. So you're just doing your dad's accent.
Yes.
Which is cool. You can do your dad's accent. He's your dad.
Yeah.
Do you feel when someone, like, you know, you're in comedy, people make jokes about Indians and other cultures. Is there something that is like a peeve of your, which kind of rubs off badly to you?
On it? I think it's changed a lot. I haven't really seen, I think now racism, I mean, like, overt racism gets called out pretty, like, if a white person was just doing an Indian accent on stage, it would be, I don't think people would respect that now. I don't really have any... I haven't seen that many people talk about it like that, but I did do, for myself, I guess I'm always kind of careful about how I guess you can't really go into all the complexities of race to make a joke funny, but you also don't want to be adding to the stereotype. But you kind of, it's like how, you're depending on how multicultural your audience is, what they're going to understand about Indian culture itself, whether they see it as anything beyond just eating curry and cricket and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's the constant kind of challenge and something that I'm working on how to be able to speak about me without representing the entire Indian continent, you know.
Yeah, I've heard most of your jokes. I think you deal with it beautifully because you keep it very personal, and
yes,
and that as far as you do that, I think it works fine.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, I'm gonna play the second joke.
Yeah,
I'm gonna play 3 in total.
Okay, awesome.
This one is.
My name is Urvi. You spell it U-R-V-I. It's from India. I'm from India, not just my name. And I remember the first day of primary school here, the teacher made us sit around in a circle and she was like, everyone, let's write a word which starts with the same letter as your name on your name card and just say hello to the world. So we're going around. I'm already tense as fuck. Amazing Ashley. Beautiful Becky. Cheeky Charlie. And then she got to my name and just started freaking out. She's like, you! And I remember her making that noise like she was angry at me. She's like, you! Underwear? Unconscious? No. I was like, try unbelievable, bitch. Unique. You got options. That's how I got the name Ugly Urvi, so that's done. It's okay, no, I'm hot now, so it's fine.
No, this is funny. I'm from India. Not just my name. That throwaway line it made me really laugh. Yeah. It's such a funny throwaway thing. But I totally.
That's funny. Yeah.
Resonated with me. Yeah.
That's funny. Because
people have Indian kind of names, no? Sometimes.
Yeah. people literally call India, and it's like the whitest person I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah. What does Urvi mean?
Okay, so yeah, the name is actually a complex one. So it means heaven and earth and like all celestial being, which is really lovely. And I was trying to write a joke because I have a younger sister, and you know when you have like your first child and everyone's like obsessed with it, like in all the photo albums, it's just pictures of me like one after the other. Now she's the favorite child, but like when I was born, apparently all of my like grandparents and everyone sat around, because in India you don't name the baby straight away, so apparently it just brought the whole family together, and they just sat around deciding what my name was for 2 or 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So my great grandma, who was very artistic as well, she chose that name for me. So that's really special to me. My sister, apparently there was just like a politician called Mehta on TV, so they just called her that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so like building a house at that stage, so they didn't have that much time. But yeah, it's a complex one, because I think here when I actually moved to Australia, I would obviously be like, you know, my name's Urvi, and I had, you know, I came from school there, so I had just full Indian accent and saying Urvi, and no one could understand it, and even the teacher was like, Urvi, and that's what they can't say the R.
Yeah.
And I remember I just hate the sound of Urvi. And then when I moved schools, sometimes people would mistake the name and say Urvi, and I thought that sounded better. So that's when I moved schools, I kind of reinvented myself and was like, this is my name now. So sometimes when I meet other Indian people, it's awkward, or people will tell me off for saying it like this, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of just such a complicated. I mean, I honestly love Urvi or Urvi, but it's just easier for me to say Urvi here.
Sure.
And I kind of like that, because it's something that I chose as well, on top of, yeah, the way that it's meant to be pronounced in India.
Sweet. I haven't heard that name much. So it is the 3 months. made a difference, like they really found like a beautiful, unique name.
It is, I think as a goddess, Urvashini, but it's not. I asked my mom if it's short for that, but she said no.
Urvashi, I've heard that. There's a very popular Indian song. Have you heard this song, Urvashi?
I feel like it's a rag, isn't it? Like
no, there's like a Bollywood song too. Okay. Urvashi.
No, I don't know it. But there's a movie, Urvi. I haven't seen it, but I need to watch it.
So you came here when you were six. How was that, coming here as a six-year-old and, you know, going through that phase of learning whatever the vibe is? And I'm guessing not that many Indian kids in schools back then?
No. Yeah, I think it was really formative. I guess you don't really see the effects of it till later. But I think it really... I think it like had a massive impact on my confidence, because I think back in India, you go from we were pretty privileged, like middle class, and then coming here and seeing your parents go through like so much struggle to sustain themselves here. So I think all of it did, but there was like so many funny moments as well. And I moved to a very white area first. So that school I didn't really love, but it kind of taught me to, I just like play by myself. Well, I had one friend and she actually came to my show recently, so it's cute. But then when I moved to a more multicultural area, I started to get more confidence and feel, that's when I changed my name as well. I think there was like lots of kind of moments of feeling like an outsider when you first move. And I think that carries on to now as well.
Yeah, because I think your sister's probably was too small to probably notice that, that much.
Yeah.
And you were just old enough to, I guess, feel it.
Yes.
And have that impact you.
Yeah.
Wait, so you, was it Melbourne? Always Melbourne?
Yeah, in Melbourne. So I think I think it's hard to say because even in India, I think I was more of an emotionally intense child than she was. So when we both came, my sister got to do kindergarten in Australia, which is like so easy. Like she was just patting rabbits and that. And I remember coming in India in kindergarten, you had to like learn how to write from 1 to 100. And then if you didn't, you got smacked. And it's just like, it was just like always like getting smacked or like crying and just like, so intense. So I think from the start she was a bit more chill and like able to make friends and be easygoing. So it took me a little while to just kind of adjust to here, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
So your first solo show, we grew up in a all girls school.
Yeah.
And the show that you did for ABC.
Yeah.
That's kind of talking about this the phase of life you're in school,
yes.
A student. Stuff in that show, and is it from your own life?
Yeah, so yeah, it's more in the time of so I went to a girls school, a selective girls school from year 9 to 12.
Okay.
And Nina Oyama, who's the director, she went to the Sydney version because there's a few different ones. So selective school just means that I think it was like 2,000 people do a test and then they choose the top 3%.
Okay. God damn, you were one of those typical smart Indian kids.
Yeah, well, my dad, I remember in grade 6, so you apply in year 8 and then you do a test, and it says this whole trauma. I think I studied harder for that than my actual end of year 12 exams. But it was like from year 6, my dad was like, you need to do tutoring and get you into this great school. And so I think the stakes were already really high to get in. And then when I turned to them and was like, I want to be an actor, they were like, no, you don't. It's just like not acceptable. And I think just like the environment of like a girls' school as well, just a lot of people relate to that. It's just kind of everything's heightened. So it's funny for comedy. And that's what the kind of world of the show is.
Okay. And are most of the stories in it actually from your life, or a lot of it is fictionalized?
I'm telling my parents it's fictionalized, but it's like, yeah, it's all just from diary entries. Most of it's from, we kind of had a writer's room. So you probably spoke to, I think you mentioned you spoke to Sashi. So Sashi, Suren, Jaiman, Rohan Ganju, and another writer, Sukhjit from Perth, was in the writer's room. So that when we do that, we pretty much share, we collect all these stories from everyone about growing up here and then put it into like a TV narrative structure.
Sweet.
So yeah, it kind of felt like we wanted to be specific but also represent more than just me.
Sure. Fair.
Yeah.
Going through that, have your parents seen that show, like your comedy special, the actual comedy show, not the show?
They haven't actually seen it. I think the current show that I'm doing at the comedy festival called Burnt, that's about the last couple of years, and I think it's the one that they probably could watch and still be fine, but there's still something in me that I'm like, it's hard for me to just like share everything with them.
Sure, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to play the third joke.
Yeah, go for it.
But I feel like now in my late 20s, I'm quickly becoming my dad, which is terrifying. Does anyone else feel like that, like they're their parents now? Yeah, I feel like circle of life. Should make a Disney movie about that. But it really comes out in my relationship because I love my boyfriend very much, but we have really different attitudes towards money. Like, I am here learning how to use Excel sheets, becoming my dad, and my boyfriend, like, I'll be cooking dinner and before I have time to, like, put it in Tupperware, it's in the bin. Anyway, I go the opposite direction and I know that's annoying for him. Like, I really screwed myself over recently. I went to the fridge and saw that the milk was going off on the 13th. So I thought, this is awesome. Today's the 13th. I'm going to finish this milk. What a day to be alive. I went on to make 2 really milky cups of tea. And with every sip, as I was sitting back, you know, smug in my chair, I was like, doesn't taste great. But in the same breath, I was like, this is organic. You're not throwing it in the bin. Like, you paid $10,000 for this. It's not going. Not quite, but close. So anyway, I finished the milk, and then when I went back to throw the empty carton in the bin, I realised that it had gone off on the 13th of January. Yeah. And now we're on the 13th of March.
And I just gaslit myself, which I thought was a man's job. But anyway, I was feeling really sick, as you would. And I'm like, I need to share this with someone. I need to tell someone. So I thought hard, and then I called my dad, and he was so proud of me. Finally.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because I'm a bit older than you. Quite a bit older than
you. You don't look good.
I'm 40. So, you know, from my 30s onwards, I experienced this struggle of feeling like, shit, I'm becoming exactly like my parents in so many ways. But there's, so at one level, I was actively trying not to. I was like, nah, don't do this. This is not me. This is just them. And I'm just imbibing this. But also, I was also always actively trying to do certain things to make my dad feel proud of me that I know would make him proud of me.
Yeah.
So there's this two things happening at the same time, right? Do you feel that? Like you want to avoid it, but also you want to do it to please him?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what it's kind of like. I talked to my psychologist about that. So it's like during... when you're younger, you kind of think you're going to have this like whole new identity and it's going to be so different and you're going to break free. It's like, I think I don't know if it's funny, but just like the concept of, I used to be like really excited by the concept of like just like running away from home when you're young and you're like, yeah, I'll just run away. But now it's like, there's like literally, it's kind of sad that you just can't, it's just like, there's no concept of like running away when you're adult. So I think for my parents, I think the way that I approach comedy, like I think I work pretty hard, and the way that I go about it is probably similar to what my dad did and my mom towards their careers, but it's just towards something that is just like a completely different thing, I guess, from them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you speak any other languages?
Yeah, I speak Bengali. So I was born in Kolkata. And then I think, I mean, I go back, I can speak it a lot better, but just here, you get out of the practice. So
yeah. So your parents are from Calcutta.
Yeah. Okay. So my mum grew up there, but my dad was grew up in Bihar, but he also went to boarding school, so he was like kind of out of home for a bit.
Does that mean you eat fish a lot
at home? Yeah, we love fish. My mum's a great cook, so she's always cooking like lamb curry, fish, the vegetable style.
What's your go-to? Is your go-to like an Indian, like a fish curry sort of thing?
Oh, I can't cook. It's just like, it's so bad. I feel like my mum is always, I see them maybe once a week, my parents, so they're always kind of packing all of this food for me to take home. And they're trying to teach me to cook, but I just feel like I'm just so slow at it and my mom can just do it so quickly. So, I just get her to cook.
Yeah, I suck at cooking too. You go back to India much? Have you been?
Yeah, I went for a dialogue. Last year I went, it was like a conference called the Australia-India Youth Dialogue, which they're always looking for more South Asian or just even people in the arts to join this. So just a shout out to them. But we got to go to Delhi, Bangalore, and then I spent a week in Kolkata with my family as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What exactly is that dialogue thing?
It's called, so it's pretty much, it's just like a dialogue between the two countries. So they choose 15 leaders from, is it 15 or 10? From each country. And then each year, this year it's in Australia, but then next year it'll be in India. And you discuss kind of like strengthening the bilateral relationship, which just means like, kind of from an arts perspective, it's about, you know, how to make those policy changes effective for just everyday people. But it was full of a lot of like really smart people kind of discussing different things about the relationship between the two countries.
Sweet. Is that something that interests you as well? Like just the politics of things and...
I think like the cultural understanding between the two countries could definitely be better. So at one point, I think this kind of dialogue's really good because from a policy level, it might seem to people that, I remember one time the phrase being used that Australia thinks of India as more than cricket and curry, but I'm like, maybe for someone who's, it depends where you are, because for a lot of Australia, that still is just what India is. Even for myself, like I don't know all the complexities of Indian culture. So because it's such a neighbouring country and such a huge market, it would make much more sense to be have a greater relationship with them.
Growing up, what was like how was humour like What was humor for you? Were there some inspirations, something that, you know, was like the biggest thing that you would go to when you wanted to laugh?
Yeah, I think for me, I didn't actually even do like watch that much comedy. I think it was more like we watched, you know, like everyone has the experience of when your parents have all their friends over, and then we'd watch like Russell Peters and Hamish and Andy. But for me, because my parents actually hated Bollywood, so we weren't even allowed to really watch that much Bollywood. I watched Karl Ho Naho and Bunty or Bubbly, and that was like the two ones. So we always used to watch like Shot the Jith Roy, or like it's like the old school like black and white films. So for me, most of my humor kind of came from watching Australian TV or like American TV. So I think that's why I'm not. I feel like a little bit torn between two cultures, because I don't have all the cultural references of like Bollywood and the things that other people grew up with as well.
Sure. So what are you doing now, and what is in comedy and writing and acting? Yeah. What's the future looking like?
So I'm currently doing my second solo hour called Burnt around Australia. So we're currently finishing Melbourne in 2 weeks, and then Brisbane, Sydney, Perth as well. And then after that, we're going on to TV writing. So trying to learn more about screenwriting and how to, I guess I'm really interested in just, learning how to make a pilot episode and just how to structure that in a way that there's like so much to learn. It's like a whole other world.
Like, you're doing a course on it?
I'm not doing a course, but I'm just trying to practice it through like extending what we've done in the past, and sure. just trying to, I think that's just the area that I want to focus on. But I guess just like practicing as much stand-up as possible and doing that too.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've asked this to everybody. I'll ask you too. What would you say is your favorite and least favorite part about being an Indian origin comedian, actor, writer in Australia? Your favorite and your least favorite part about it?
I think the favorite is, I think there's like favorite part is this feeling, I guess doing comedy, you kind of do feel like I've kind of always felt like an outsider a bit in my life. And there's just like a real joy in being able to perform something or write something and have people resonate with it. So it kind of just makes you feel like, I just feel like it's a lot of fun. So when you have a really great gig, and it doesn't have to be just Indian people or South Asian people, it's just a mix, that's really empowering. Least favorite part is, I guess I'm kind of realizing that there's not that many, I mean, there's a lot of people coming up and people to look up to, but there's doesn't feel like there's a clear path or like a clear role model already of South Asian women in mainstream Australian media. So I think it's a challenge, and it's hopefully something that we can, you know, start to have, so that the next generation have some people to look up to and know that it's like a possibility.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You will be the inspiration.
I will see. But yeah. I think that's sometimes it feels a bit like when I talk to my parents about it, I'm like, look at Mindy Kaling or like Aziz Ansari and stuff, but it's always like an American example. So I think we're still to see that in Australia.
Hopefully soon. But yeah, thanks for doing
Thank
this.
Thank you. That's a really great conversation.
I had fun talking to you. Yeah, thanks. And do you mind giving a shout out to your social media handles?
Yeah, my social media handle is Urvi or Urvi, URVI _ Majumdar, MAJUMDAR. It's just that Instagram. Yeah, in Instagram.
Okay, sweet. Urvi _ Majumdar.
Yeah, that's right.
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok.
Yeah, all across. Yeah.
Okay, sweet. Thank you
awesome.
So much.
Thank you so much for this.
Comedy Karma is an SBS original podcast. It was created and produced by me, Aditya Gautam, with editing help from Tarun Tyagi. I would like to give a huge thanks to the SBS team at the Melbourne office and to Caroline Gates and Joel Supple, who made this podcast possible. You can find Comedy Karma on SBS or on any other platform where you get your podcasts. Go listen to more episodes and more jokes. Go do it.